Good evening. You are listening to KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio out of Round Mountain. And this is Jim Dowling. I'll be your host tonight on the show called Right Stuff. If you happen to be listening to Right Stuff for the first time, it is a show where I bring in a different writer every month. I interview them. They share some of their work with us. Okay, our guest tonight, or today, I should say, is Linda Boyden, a local writer. Thanks for coming in, Linda. I see, Linda, that you brought Seniors with Attitude, a book that you self-published.
That's correct. In fact, it was produced here, printed here at Pacific West Graphics, right here in Reading.
Yeah.
And it's, as we get aging, seniors sometimes can get a bad attitude.
Sure.
And the title story in this one, this is poetry and prose on aspects of aging.
Mm-hmm.
And the title story is Senior with Attitude, which recounts my father's last few years.
Well, why don't you share a little bit while you're here? I'm really curious.
I have been first I was a teacher.
Right.
For many, many years.
Sure.
I started in 1970, and I retired in 1996. I have taught everything from preschool to K, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Even I taught 2 years here in Reading at Simpson University.
Okay.
So I have a big amount of
teaching
experience. And during my time in Virginia teaching, that was the time of the whole language movement. And the whole language movement was teaching children to think critically, number one.
Sure.
Number two is how to express themselves through words. So my second or third grade classes would make books, their own books, fiction or nonfiction, depended on the child. And then they would illustrate them on a big drawing paper.
Wow. Go through the whole process.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. And divided the paper in half, and then they sewed with darning needles their finished pages.
Sure.
And then book covers were made all by the kids.
Wow.
You know, because it was my whole part of teaching was to be teaching the kids to be independent.
You giving up teaching to write, that's a bold move. You know, everybody knows that to go from a serious profession like teaching and say, oh, well, I'm going to be a writer now.
And a pretty good salary, too.
Yeah, exactly. So it took courage, didn't it?
It took a lot of courage and it took free time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for the first time in my life, I wasn't mothering or teaching or, you know, whatever. It was just me and John. And then I said, what will I do to fill the void? Well, I'll start writing.
Great.
And I did. And my first picture book came out in 2002.
Yeah.
It was called The Blue Roses. And it won Lee and Lowe Books in New York. It won their first New Voices Award.
I was going to say that because guess what? I bought that book a couple of weeks ago and read it and really enjoyed it.
Oh.
It's a beautiful book, and I loved the message. It's a very sensitive message. Great book for kids dealing with a difficult issue.
I that was one of the main reasons I wrote it is to, there you he has it right there.
And you're going to sign it, by the way.
And this was illustrated by the wonderful Amy Cordova.
Yeah.
I said that I wanted an illustrator who understood the color blue.
Sure.
And that because this is vital to the story.
Yep.
And there are no blue roses in reality.
Well, I didn't think so.
No, there aren't.
Okay.
But there's like a really dark blue that's been produced recently, but not like that, not
right.
like those. And
but that's sort of the mystical beauty of the book, you know.
That was the point. And it helps children understand death and dying. In fact, so many moms or parents had come up to me after I would do a reading or something, and say, this book has helped me explain death to my children.
Right. Well, let's give a really light sketch of what it's about. We have, correct me if I'm wrong, but okay. We have a child who's lost a beloved grandparent.
Mm-hmm.
And what was the connection with the Blue Roses?
Oh, well, Rosalie, every year on her birthday, Papa would plant a rose bush on her birthday. And Rosalie's, as she got a little bit older, like in the cover picture there, she had a red rose bush, a yellow, a pink, and she says, Papa, my favorite color is blue, and I would like a blue roses.
Right.
And Papa said, they don't exist. You know, they don't exist. That color, roses don't come in that color. And so after he passes, she goes into, not a depression, but she's very sad. She misses him very much. And she had a dream. And in the dream, Papa came to her. And this actually happened to me with my grandfather who passed away.
Oh, wow.
I lived too far away to go to his funeral. And I grew up with him. I mean, we had a very close-knit family back then. And I had this dream of him standing in a garden in heaven, and he pointed at me and he says, stop crying, I am happy.
Wow.
Now, stop your tears.
Mm.
And so that was the whole the germ of this book.
Sure. Well, it's a beautiful book, and Amy Cordova, she's done an incredible job.
Oh.
It's a good book, and appreciate it if you would sign it afterwards.
Oh, I'd be happy to.
Yeah, it's a wonderful book. Linda Boyden writes poetry, books for children and young adults. She's the author of a book called Seniors with Attitude. There's a wide spectrum to Linda's writing, lots of awards and recognition. Her first book, The Blue Roses, came out in 2002. It won its publisher the first New Voices Award, went on to receive the Patterson Prize, the WordCraft Circle of Native American Writers and Storytellers Book of the Year. Not bad for a first book. That was followed by Powwow's Coming, another book for children in 2007, and Giveaways, that teaches children the many words in our language borrowed from Native Americans. That book, recipient of 3 awards and included in California's list of recommended titles. She's done a great job. So, well, I think Linda's going to treat us to a story from her book, Seniors with Attitude. And so, yes.
Okay, Seniors with Attitude is a collection of short stories and poems on the various aspects of aging. And this first one is called... It has the title, Senior with Attitude, and it's about my dad. It gets harder every day, Ray thought, as he waited at the intersection of his driveway and Route 1. He looked left, then right, then leaned forward before repeating the drill. Next, he rolled the window all the way down and listened for a lull in the drone of the highway traffic. Hearing nothing, he held his breath and raced across to the far lane of Route 1 like a squirrel on cocaine. Once there, Ray breathed again. Sweat beaded under the band of his Boston Red Sox ball cap. He adjusted its brim and warned himself to calm down. I sure don't need a heart attack before I get on the highway, he muttered. It was a little afternoon, the only time of day Ray allowed himself the luxury of driving, and then only if the sun were shining. No sense in tempting fate. Of course, it took plenty of convincing. He hated to admit it might be downright lying so his wife Marie wouldn't worry. Hell, she worries about everything. But to be honest, she wasn't so much a nag as she was simply a warrior by nature. That woman worried about the weather, what to wear, especially to church. She worried about being on time and being late. She worried about him taking his pills, the weekly grocery sales, the car insurance, and the kids. All 4 of them were grandparents now, for the love of Pete. Give it a rest, was his philosophy. Ray waited at the stoplight next to Baldwin's hardware store. He might drop back in on his way back if he remembered to get some more of those 150-watt light bulbs. His supply was running low. Route 1 now became a section of strip malls, store after stinking store. His least favorite part of the trip. Ray stayed in the right lane, wanting to just get past this 3-mile stretch that led to his Highland Avenue exit. He let his mind drift back to Marie and her worrying. The one thing he would not allow her to start in on anymore was his driving. Once she got going, nothing would stop her. So a month ago, he told her, in no uncertain terms, to butt out. He had been driving since he was 14 years old. He knows how to handle a car. Certainly, he could drive to the bank or the grocery store and back, despite Route 1. Hell, they had lived in this town for over 50 years. He knew it blindfolded. Ray cleared his throat and admitted maybe his driving wasn't what it used to be. But because Marie had never gotten her license, he felt he had won the argument hands down. However, what he wouldn't say to Marie or to anyone else for that matter was, what would they do if he couldn't drive? How would they get by? A horn blared from behind and Ray slammed on the brakes in reflex. A red Mustang swept past him, a hand extended from the passenger side window in an obscene gesture. Dumbass, Ray said, his heart pumping double time. Stupid young people always in a rush, with radios blasting that crazy noise they call music and yakking on cell phones to boot. He'd show him. Ray merged into the left lane, accelerating and squealing around the curve by Harmon's used car lot. Once past that, Ray knew the road straightened out, so he accelerated even more. He wasn't going to lose those damn fool kids. He saw a red blur up ahead, the Mustang, he guessed, and still speeding. So he told himself, go for it. He wasn't 100% sure what he would do once he caught up with them. Maybe play a little game of chicken, like he and his brother Rip often did back home in their Tennessee mountains. Ray grinned, thinking about Rip, his older brother who had died too young. Still, not many days went by without Ray missing him something fierce. He chuckled, thinking about Rip, when behind him came a new sound, a siren. Oh. Good, Ray thought at first. Finally a cop around when you need one. But then he realized this cop was motioning him over? What the hell? Ray pulled in the nearby Walmart parking lot, turned off the engine. The cruiser stopped behind him, its blue lights flashing. The officer sauntered over, just watching how the young man strutted, muscles bulging under a starched blue shirt, each step purposeful, pissed Ray off more. Just my luck, another wise guy, he thought, opening his door. The officer stopped him. Remain in your car, sir. Ray looked at him up and down. You think I'm a criminal, son? The officer's face remained blank. Procedure, sir. License and registration, please. He flipped open a pad. Any idea how fast you were going, sir? Ray exploded. Me? Them damn fool kids in that red Mustang about mowed me over. Why don't you go chase after them and catch some real drug-dealing sex fiend criminals instead of me, a U.S. Navy veteran to boot? Unimpressed, the officer continued writing. Sir, I clocked you going 55 into 40 mile per hour zone. Again, may I see your license and registration? Son of a bitch, Ray mumbled as he opened the glove box. Profanity, said the officer, scribbling some more. Ray handed out his documents. You're writing me up for cussing? Isn't this still the great U.S. of A? Or maybe you don't like seniors. Uh-huh, that's what it is. It's elder abuse, that's what. Who's your superior, boy? I want his name and number. The policeman's voice remained steady. Captain Margaret Weston, 555-0798. Don't that just about figure? What's this friggin' world coming to? The officer gave Ray his papers and ripped the ticket from his pad. Sir, if you choose to contest this, you... Damn straight, I'm going to contest it. I'll see you in court, bucko. The officer hastily took back the ticket and wrote some more. He squatted next to the window and said, Mr. Simmons, this started out as a straightforward $50 speeding ticket. But your profanity and belligerence has bumped it up a notch. I suggest we end this right here, right now. Ray looked into the officer's eyes, then quickly away. His mouth felt dry, drier than it had been in a long time, but he ignored the adrenaline rushing through his veins and managed to keep his mouth shut. The officer stood up. Try to have a better rest of your day, sir. Ray watched the officer return to his car, then he looked at the ticket. $95? Oh, Marie's going to pitch a fit. Looking again, Ray read what the officer had added. Scrawled across the top of the ticket in oversized letters, he had written, Senior with Attitude. Ray waited till the cruiser left the parking lot. He tossed the ticket on the passenger seat, looked at himself in the rearview mirror, straightened his Bosox cap, and grinned. Damn straight I've got attitude, Ray said. Damn straight.
Oh, that's delightful.
that was something my dad. About,
yeah, interesting guy, and he definitely had attitude.
Yep.
Funny story. You write good humor.
Oh,
I like
thank
it.
You.
Yeah. So, Linda, let's talk a little bit about this story that's coming out later this year, Twitch. What's that about?
Well, Twitch is it's a longtime project of mine, and because work as a children's writer, I've had a pretty good run with picture books, but I always wanted to write a teen book, and so I just when the Harry Potter books came out by J.K. Rowling. I read every one, I devoured every one of them, and I loved how she took a modern teenage, a bunch of teenagers in her case, and pitted them against Celtic mythology coming to life.
Sure.
So all the things they had to battle and win were from the Celtic mythology. And I said, wow, this is a, I want to do my teen novel about a young Cherokee boy. Now, modern Cherokee boy.
Sure.
And the reason I feel comfortable doing this is that my dad was Cherokee and Irish, and my mother was French Canadian. So, you know, I'm kind of a big mixture of different nationalities, ethnicities, or whatever. But I have studied a lot of Cherokee mythology, as much as I get my hands on.
Okay.
So my book, Twitch, is about a 14-year-old modern Cherokee boy who has to battle Cherokee things that come to life.
Okay.
You know, monsters.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But at the beginning, I said I started in reality. You know, they live in Tennessee, in the mountains of Tennessee, like my dad. And
in current times?
Yes, in current times.
You know, let me just say off to the side here, I think your rendering of Native Americans is very respectful.
Thank
I mean,
you.
There's a universality about children, and you know, you grow up with all these stereotypes. You know, if it's about Native Americans, we're going to see kids out in the woods or people out in the woods with bows and arrows and stuff like that. So, you know, I'm just saying that I think you do a pretty good job.
Well, thank you.
Have you gotten any feedback from Native Americans?
Well, it's not published yet, so not many people have had access to it.
I was thinking of
my
your
publisher
other books.
Is yeah. Red Red Planet Comics and Books in Albuquerque, New Mexico. It's
sure.
a native-run publishing company.
Okay.
And so Twitch will be their first teen novel.
Cool.
Like, I'm all excited.
Absolutely. Okay.
So I'm just going to read a few pages of the first chapter in Twitch.
Okay.
The forest around Long River laughs. I stand as still as a shadow, one hand on the rough bark of a pine, the other gripping the strap of my backpack as a fresh wave of laughter rolls over my head. Twitch, Jeetstu Taylor, I whisper. Trees can't laugh and your mama didn't raise no fools. Still it continues, as high and giggly as a bunch of third graders. I swallow hard, but keep my eyes sharp. Shouldn't there be a herd of little kids tearing up the trail by now? Around me are trees, rocks, butterflies, all the normal forest stuff. Sure, I've been away for 4 years, living in Marquise on the other side of Smoketop Mountain, but I know this forest. My whole family, from Granny right on down to my sister Jazz, we have lived in this part of Tennessee since forever. The wind stops and the forest slides into silence. No chirps, no buzzing, no nothing. Sweat beads on my top lip as the silence steals my breath too. Within minutes, though, it's like the trees have exhaled. Birds twitter again. Pine needles whoosh in the soft breeze. I roll my shoulders, pop my knuckle, and decide to get going when the laughter returns, deep and thunderous this time, but coming from the opposite direction. My feet take charge. I run from the laughter all the way to Turtle Rock, the humped-over boulder that Jazz and I have named for obvious reasons. Here, at least, the forest seems normal. I climb on top to catch my breath. Across Long River, two does nibble on the grassy bank. A mosquito buzzes my ear, so I swat it away. The only other sound is the rush and gurgle of Long River. Not one giggle. Did I imagine it? Am I losing it? I tuck up my knees, rest my head, and think. In May, my Auntie Jewel was killed in a freak car wreck. On the day of her funeral, my father, Eldon, disappeared after leaving a note on Granny's kitchen table. The note gave me away to his brother, my Uncle Deller, who was married to Auntie. Not one person argued, not Mama or Granny, not even my loudmouth sister. When Uncle read it, he nodded like it was normal, like fathers give away their sons every day of the week and twice on Sundays. The forest around Long River, he said, this part of the Great Smoky Mountains is where you will meet your future and your past. Made me tilt my head, but he kept on. Jistu, before any of us Cherokees met any Europeans, boys your age were given to uncles or grandfathers to be taught the ways of true men. It was our custom then, and could still be a valid option today. He tucked a toothpick in the corner of his mouth and walked off while I stood there just shaking my head. Like I said, that was over a month ago. Heck, by now it's darn near 2 months. Still, here I am, where the highest high point of any day is when one of Granny's hens lays an egg. I'm done with this. By tomorrow, I swear, I'll have figured out an escape plan. See if I don't. Good kitchen smells wake me up. I hurry down from my loft bedroom and into the kitchen where Uncle's at the table reading a book. When he sees me, he looks up. Osio, son, hello. After you eat, it'll be time to learn the forest. Your backpack is ready. I shrug as I fix a bowl of cereal. Jeet stew? He stretches out my Cherokee family name so it sounds like Jee stew. That right there drives me nuts and he knows it. Sure, most of my Cherokee friends also have Cherokee family names because of some dumb way we acted before we knew any better. When I was 2, Granddaddy Giles called me Jeetstu, the Cherokee word for rabbit, because I was twitchy like one. But I'm 14 now and over it. I set Uncle straight. My friends call me Twitch, and I'm going back home to Marquise. I say nothing else while I eat. Uncle stays quiet, too, until I finish. He puts down the book, stands, picks up the backpack, throws it hard at my chest. My eyes bug out. The bowl flips over, milk spilling into tiny puddles on the placemat. Clean that up, then come outside. And out the back door he went, his old hound dog Toots at his heels. I sop up the mess, rinse both the bowl and placemat, and then put him in the drainer so Granny won't pitch a fit. Grab the stupid pack and stomp out to the back porch steps. He waits on the bottom one, leaning against the rail, gnawing on his toothpick. In the sky, a couple of blue jays pester each other rough enough so one drops a tail feather. It glides past the mimosa tree and lands straight up in the grass like a mini flagpole. Uncle stays quiet. Out of the corner of my eye, I watch him staring at Granny's cornfield like he's teaching the corn a better way to grow. Yeah, okay, I get it. He's giving me the old Uncle Dale silent treatment. All right, Uncle, game on. I stand first on one foot, then the other, watching Toots snap at flies. When he figures it's a lost cause, he waddles to a shady spot and plops down. Directly above me, there's an old hornet's nest under an eave. A couple of dead ones dangle awful close to my head, so I move down a step and stare at the hole in my tennis shoe. I dig at it with my big toe, listening to Uncle's silence until I can't take it no more. You know you can't make me stay, Uncle. Nobody can. He takes out the toothpick and points it at me. First, I did not choose this any more than you did. Second, your father, my only brother, needs me to train you, something no one else in the world can do. My hands go wide. My father? That's rich. You're talking about the dumbass that ran off the day of your wife's funeral? Him? He's quick in my face. That's disrespect, son, and I'll have none of it. A whole lot of argument pops up in my head, but I let it be. He pushes back the brim of his Caterwauler River Crew cap, wipes his forehead. Look, son, all of us are struggling, understand? We all are. I can't explain the... He stops, clears his throat, blinks fast. I can't explain my Jules accident or what your daddy did or why, but I know he loves you. I make a noise. Fathers who love their kids keep them. And why out of the blue would he insist I get traditional training when he would never let us even learn the language? The rest of y'all, the whole family, speaks Cherokee, but not me, Jazz, or Mama. Makes no damn kind of sense.
Thank you so much for coming in, Linda. And you're a great reader, by the way. Enjoyed your stories. Before you go, you know, I'm sure there's some beginning writers out there. Do you have any advice for people just getting started in writing?
Well, I think the smartest thing to do is go to the library, and if you want to write picture books or if you want to write novels for teens, go to that section of books that have been recently published. Mm-hmm. And that's the key word, recently. Because you then see, by doing that, if you read enough of them, I mean, I went and I read hundreds of picture books.
Wow.
Before I tried to write my first one. Because I needed to do that. I need to know what publishers are producing.
Sure.
Yep.
Sure.
You look at the publication, and then you go back, and because inside the book it says what publisher,
mm-hmm.
look them up online.
Yeah.
See that most publishers will tell you, here's what we're looking at,
right.
looking for.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that you have to do a whole lot of research on your own.
Sure. Well, it's a fast-changing world, too. You know, literature that appealed to kids 20 years ago isn't going to cut it today, most of it.
I know. Yeah. You could join organizations like Reading Writers Forum. There's Native Writers and Storytellers. Mm. That's still...
Local?
No. It's in Albuquerque, I believe.
Okay.
Based down there.
Sure. So there are options out there.
Mm-hmm.
You said something I've heard quite a bit. You know, if you want to write good stuff, you got to go read good stuff.
Yeah. And another thing is you read a lot and write a lot. Just write every day.
Sure.
I have journals. I buy the old ones you had in grade school, and marble front,
mm-hmm.
and I just write something a day, every day.
Sure.
I mean, if you want to be a great tennis player, you got to play tennis every day.
Yeah.
And the same thing you need to do for
There's a lot of discipline
writing.
Involved. Yeah.
Oh, a lot.
Yeah.
I used to write a poem a day from 2011 to about last year.
Oh, you did that.
That's me.
I know another poet that tried to do that too.
Well, and you know why? Because it jump starts writing a poem jump starts my fiction writing.
Interesting.
So it's like doing warm ups if you're an athlete.
Yeah.
You know, so just write for 15 minutes, set a timer, and when it dings, stop.
Yep.
If you need to do that. If not, you know, after a while, you won't need the timer at all. But it worked for me, and it works for a lot of other writers, too.
Get your creativity revved up early. You betcha.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, again, thank you so much for coming in, and it's been a great interview, and pleasure to have you on.
My pleasure.
Oh, good. Thank you. Okay, let's get back to signing your book, The Blue Roses. You've been listening to Write Stuff. It comes on every fourth Thursday of the month at 8 p.m. on KKRN 88.5 FM, community radio out around Mountain. And this has been Jim Dowling, your host for the evening. Thanks for tuning in.